Welcome to Business Innovators, the show where today's boldest business minds reveal not just what they've built, but why they kept going. I'm Robert Tuckman. Few entrepreneurs have redefined an entire industry the way today's guest has. In 2013, she launched Beauty Counter and pioneered what became known as the clean beauty movement, creating not just a brand, but a new standard for safety, transparency, and advocacy in cosmetics. Greg Renfrew took an entrenched player's, built a billion-dollar company, and even testified before Congress to push for regulation that didn't yet exist. When the brand she built lost its way under new ownership, Greg did something almost unheard of. She bought it back in 2024 to reinvent it on her own terms. Now, with her newest venture, Counter, Greg is once again innovating using everything that she's learned to reset the bar for the beauty industry in 2025 and beyond. Her career is a masterclass in spotting gaps, creating movements, and turning setbacks into launch pads for the next big idea. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You've got it. So you've been an entrepreneur since college, starting your first house cleaning company, as I hear, on Nantucket. What was it about those early experiences that made you comfortable creating your own path rather than following one?
Well, first of all, I've always had to have a side hustle. My whole life, you know, growing up, my parents, one, I had some financial insecurity, but also my parents really felt strongly that I should earn my own money, use my own money for things that I wanted to do. And so that forced me to think out of the box oftentimes, because as a little girl and as a teenager, there weren't tons of jobs available. And I think that my first entrepreneurial endeavor on Nantucket was because I really wanted to go on a program called Semester at Sea, and my mother couldn't afford to pay the additional tuition for that abroad program. And so I made a decision to live with this family on Nantucket. So I had to figure out how to make a bunch of extra money, and cold called every cleaning company on Nantucket to say, would you be interested in services? And finally someone said yes, and the rest is history. But I think it's somewhat out of necessity. Sometimes I just see white space. I see opportunity and can imagine things that are not yet clear to other people.
Did you know from that start, like when you first started doing that, or basically, I know you were doing it kind of out of necessity, but did you have an energy or feeling that, you know, this was something you could see yourself doing for yourself and maybe building your own business one day?
I didn't want to do cleaning long term. We need too many disgusting things. People don't treat rental properties particularly well.
Oh, geez.
I think I've always really, from the earliest days, enjoyed business. And I do remember when I first got to college, having a conversation with a man, Dort Cameron, with whom I was living. I was living with him on Nantucket and his entire family, helping take care of their home as part of a summer job. And I remember saying to him, you know, I really like this business thing. I think it's really interesting. I think I could do a lot here. And he said, no, you've got that. Like, you've got that X factor. Like, you see things, you're communicative, you're direct, you should go for it. And so I think I always really enjoyed the idea of business. My very first job out of college was working for an advertising firm, and I felt extremely held back in that firm where my ideas weren't really being listened to because I was the most junior. And so I think very early on in my career, maybe even when I was a teenager, you know, on Nantucket, I did feel like I wanted to sort of chart my own course and build my own businesses.
Yeah, you're definitely, you know, had that entrepreneurial kick as soon as, you know, you're starting your first job and you're looking around and you can't take direction. You know, you could do it better than the people who are telling you to do things. I remember just before I started a bunch of my businesses, having that same feeling. And it's great to see that, you know, you didn't settle and you went out. But it sounds like this person was a mentor. Did you have other mentors and role models early on that, you know, helped you in terms of, you know, what you wanted to eventually get into in terms of retail products?
I've had a lot of people that have contributed to my success and my thinking along the way. You know, one person who was a mentor to me in my early life is my mother. And And I say that because of some financial instability and my father became ill when we were younger, she really had to figure out how to support our family and wanted to support us in the way that she felt was, you know, she wanted to do it the way she wanted to raise us. I mean, whatever. She wanted to be able to afford my son, my brother private school because he had learning disabilities, et cetera. And so I watched her lead by example and also constantly tell me, like, you have everything you need to be successful. You're just going to have to work really, really hard. Nothing comes easily, but you can do this, Greg. You can be the president of the United States if you want to. Just stay the course. And so I think she was an early mentor. And I think along the way, I've always seeked and still continue to seek. I seek guidance from people who I think are smarter than I am, know more than I do. I'm constantly trying to learn from others because I think as an entrepreneur, one of the things that makes entrepreneurs and all business people successful is knowing where you're really strong and knowing where you're not as strong and knowing where to find support. And so I had a lot of different people that I would look to help me, you know, gain confidence, skills, and also give me constructive criticism. So there have been quite a few people that have helped me along the way.
Yeah, it sounds like your mother was a huge influence, especially, you know, from some of the things you just told me and what she told you, giving you that confidence. But also you getting to see, like you said, her really raise you, you know, when your father was ill, and being able to do that, I'm sure gave you a lot of confidence that, you know, potentially if she could do this, that when you were starting, let's say, you know, Beauty Counter, that you were going to be able to be successful. It sounds like she was an amazing woman.
She did. She did things in an entrepreneurial way, buying and selling homes, renovating them, and then ultimately went to run one of the largest real estate firms or part of a division of one of the largest real estate firms in New York City. So yes, she was a great role model for me.
And still is.
And still is.
So, you know, I know that, I guess, earlier in your career, you did do some consulting for some of, you know, some huge names like J. Crew and Bergdorf Goodman. I know them well. Yeah, I see a lot of bills from them.
Don't we all?
Yeah. And in any case, you know, what did those experiences, I guess, you know, teach you about, as you said, you were able to look at and find some of the white spaces and gaps. But what was it from maybe those really early experiences, would you say, that, you know, taught you how to do that?
I think that from the earliest days in my career, there was my side sort of business, which is, you know, it started with the cleaning company. I had this bridesmaid's dress company. That bridesmaid's dress company led me to a woman in London who had a wedding registry business called The Wedding List, which we brought back to the States and created one of the first multi-channeled retail businesses, which I sold to Martha Stewart in 2001.
Yes, I totally remember that business.
And that was an incredible experience because I learned from not only the process of raising capital, finding out how hard it can be to raise capital, timing in business, how important it is, because actually we were a little too early at the time, selling to another company, what that means for you as an entrepreneur, working for Martha Stewart, who is a very demanding woman, actually having two different bosses, Martha and her Sharon Patrick, who was the chief operating officer. All those experiences led me to understand that in business you need to, and also like working for Xerox, is that you're in service of your clients. You need to be a really, really good listener, because I find oftentimes in business, people are really quick to want to hear themselves talk, but they're not doing enough listening. And I think the strongest leaders are those that can listen to others and learn from them, but then also come back with decisive things after they've done a lot of listening and provide solutions for problems. So I think all through all of my different experiences, whether it was consulting for Bergdorf and understanding what their needs were, listening enough so that I could provide them with some sound solutions and opportunities, or, you know, watching Martha Stewart lead her company, I think all of those things shaped me. And I think if there's one thing that has stayed sort of with me from really the earliest days, is that you are in service of others and you're not really selling to people, you're serving them. And if you think about it from that standpoint, I have found it makes you much more successful.
Yeah, well, you certainly have been successful. And I know early on, you apparently worked closely with Jessica Alba. Did that experience reinforce the idea that the consumer was looking for better for you products before the industry was really kind of ready to deliver them?
When I met Jessica, it was when I had first been transferred to Los Angeles with my husband's job. We were introduced through a mutual friend, and she had been convinced by someone that she should be starting an organic children's clothing line. And because I had run Best in Company, a children's clothing company for Tommy and Susie Hilfiger, I was put on her list of people to call. We met and decided to work with one another for a period of time. It was during that period that she was trying to figure out exactly what to do. She did care about sustainability and healthier options. I really had been working in children's and was looking at how people were washing their clothes and thinking about what was touching children's bodies. I don't think that I learned from when I was working with her that things, it was less about timing for her from my work with her. It was more about understanding, you know, interestingly enough, Jessica, because she'd always been known as a beautiful, beautiful actress and, you know, in some ways like a sex symbol. I mean, she's absolutely stunning. And I kept saying, no one cares that you're a mom. Like, why don't you go into beauty? We were talking about a whole bunch of different things as she was exploring her options. But I think that what I learned from that experience was, well, one, I learned I'm probably not a good celebrity partner because I feel like you said, it's not just about having bosses. Like, I'm really, really direct. And Hollywood is not a very direct place. But also, I think that I learned that you need to have the right market fit with the person and the brand at the right time. It all goes together. There are many pieces of a puzzle that need to be put together properly in order for a business to succeed. If that makes sense. I don't know if it does.
No, it totally does. I mean, you know, I had sold one business to Creative Artist Agency and worked there for 5 years. So I totally understand what you're talking about when you're dealing with people and having to, like you said, because what's so important to you is really servicing people and listening. And unfortunately, when you're dealing, depending on celebrity types or just higher ups, it's so hard to do if you are very direct, but it makes you probably such a great entrepreneur. And that's why you've really been successful. And I want to talk about, you know, I think the business that, at least from my standpoint, I know I knew or heard about and maybe, you know, was the one that put you, let's say, on the map. And that's Beauty Counter, which launched in 2013. It was a radically different message, kind of safer products, ingredient transparency. And you were lobbying for stricter regulations. You know, what inspired you to take that risk in an industry where the status quo was so set in stone at the time? Because not only did you have to build a business, which you know is so hard, but you really had to change kind of an entire industry and thought process.
Well, the first thing I would say is probably just a combination of naivete and total insanity. I mean, which I would say most entrepreneurs have, right? You just don't know what you don't know. And then also you're bold enough to think you can make a difference in the world. So I think it's a combination of all those things and just being crazy enough to try. I also think that I had read a book a really, really long time ago called Blue Ocean Strategy. And it was basically, I remember it was about that brand Tubuck Chuck and some other brands where they had saturated market and they went and they carved out their own space within an existing market inundated with brands and products. And I think that book I read years and years ago, but it had given me confidence that you can carve something out within an industry that already exists. I think oftentimes people, even now as I've launched Counter, people say, well, there are so many beauty brands and there's so many clean beauty brands. How could you possibly go back into the market? And I think it is about figuring out what is your value proposition and what is your point of view and how do you create a moat around your own business and don't spend too much time looking at what the competition is doing, but actually just focus on the merits of what you're trying to achieve. And I think for me with Beauty Counter, it really started back in 2006, way before I moved to Los Angeles, even before I was working with the Hilfigers. It was really because my friend had told me to watch An Inconvenient Truth. I became really impassioned with the environmental health movement and also like at the exact same time I was watching so many of my friends get sick. And you know this, there's not a single person with whom I speak that hasn't been touched directly or indirectly by the health issues we face, whether that's infertility or fertility issues, giving birth to kids with health issues, struggling with different types of cancer. People are getting sick younger and younger and for less obvious reasons. And so knowing that there was something going wrong with the health of the earth and our human health, I began to connect the dots. And that took me literally several years and a lot of many conversations. But those observations led me to a place where I was making a lot of changes in my life, some of that which were very easy, like switching from plastic to glass or changing my household cleaning products. But when it came to skincare and personal care products, there just weren't any products that really met my needs. You know, we had all the incumbent brands that we'd all grown up with, that you've grown up with. And when we talk about this, it's not just makeup, it's your shave cream, it's your deodorant, it's your lipstick, it's everything. And I think there were so many brands that we'd all love that were filled with what I now knew to be chemicals of concern, or there's very eco brands on the other side that didn't work well. They weren't commercially viable necessarily. I just thought that there was an opportunity.
Yeah, well, there certainly was. And I'm glad you went for it. But it is really interesting. You know, you bring up that point because being in the same age range, I'll just say, I saw your Wikipedia.
Yeah, I'm 57 now. So, which some days I'm like, how did I get here? I still feel really, really young, but
it's unbelievable. I know. It's amazing to think that and just getting here. But what I'm finding or seeing now, you are so ahead of the game because there's a lot of people who are, let's say, Gen X or old and getting sick because of all of those products we were using, the food we were eating and the process. So I'm wondering, you know, hey, there's been so many advances in medicine, but yet nowadays it seems like so many people, at least friends of mine in their 50s, you know, early 60s, wherever it is, who are becoming sick because of this. And it sounds like you know, going back to 06, that's a long, especially when people consider, you know, let's say 20 years. I mean, but it's years in terms of how products have changed. How are you able to, you know, build trust and awareness in those early days with clean beauty, you know, when it wasn't mainstream and no one really, you know, you could have told someone 20 years ago, you know, I don't care. It's like you were suntanning at the beach and you had one of those, things.
Oh, I absolutely did. You know, I think that you know this. I mean, I think that as entrepreneurs, you know, one thing that entrepreneurs are, they are passionate and they have conviction and determination and they don't always succeed. And certainly I've had many failures, but I think that what allowed me the opportunity to create the clean beauty movement and lead it at the time was first of all, just being incredibly transparent and direct, arming people with information, not overwhelming them. This wasn't about fear mongering. It was really just to say, look, there are chemicals of concern in commerce, period, full stop, whether they're in the food industry, the personal care industry, and your household cleaning products, they exist, many of which have never been tested for safety in human health. Certain of those chemicals are in our skincare, color, cosmetic, personal care products. And those products are going in to your bodies through via your skin. And I would just point to a couple of, you know, important facts as I started talking about it. And basically, I feel like I ran a political campaign across the states because I would just fly into a city and I would get up and I would talk. And I would say, for example, at the time, the U.S. had only restricted 11 chemicals from commerce with respect to personal care. The EU had banned or restricted almost 1,400. So that in and of itself was something that opened people's eyes. And I think you said something. There's been a lot of focus, and we're certainly a capitalist nation, where there's been a lot of focus on the cure because that's good business, right? But what we're not talking about enough as a nation is what are the preventative measures that help to lead to longevity and health and good health for long periods of time. And so I would always say to people, look, you'll put a seatbelt on when you get in your car. It's unlikely you're going to get in a car crash today, but you put the seatbelt on. It may be that we'll never know when a cell goes from being healthy to unhealthy or what actual product you put on your body that made that cell go, you know, move over to the unhealthy side. But why not err on the side of being cautious? And let's not be extremists and let's not judge the decisions we made prior to having this knowledge. But now that we know, we can all do better. And that was sort of my message. And I think it resonated with people because I was being honest and transparent. And also, we were genuinely walking the walk. And you mentioned earlier, I testified in front of Congress. We advocated tirelessly for more comprehensive regulation over the entire industry, not to serve our own needs, but to serve the American consumer. And I think people knew we were doing that. And as such, they were really focused on helping us, you know, achieve that.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, just your belief in this and, like, as you said, walking the walk, the timing of it as well, just in terms of how things were changing, I think was ideal. But if you were to look back, what do you think the hardest lesson was you learned when you were scaling Beauty Counter? I mean, you made it into a $1 billion brand. If you had to look back, what would that be?
One thing that I definitely learned that I should have been way more focused on in the beginning was technology and what technology was going to do for business and how technology was going to be. And it's not that I didn't know that. I mean, I'd been in retail and e-commerce and all that, but I think I underestimated the power of technology with respect to my business. So that was one of my beginning mistakes. And I think that I was always playing catch up, as many companies are, but it was really detrimental to the success of our business because having a frictionless experience with the brands you support is important to consumers. And we have also had a community of women that were building businesses with us. They were amplifying our efforts, acquiring new customers and educating the communities, and not making that super, super easy and seamless for them was a challenge. So I think that is one. And I think the other really big thing that I learned during this entire process is to really think about partnership. When you think about financial sponsors, when people go out to raise capital, they're so eager to raise capital. They're so focused on the valuation. But at the end of the day, the valuation is only important when it clears your bank account. And with whom you partner is as important as you know, with whom you partner in life, because these people are with you through the whole journey. And if it's working well, your business will be more successful. And if it's not working well, as an entrepreneur, you can be really hamstrung. And that is a great learning and something that I'm way wiser about today. Not that I don't make mistakes, as I still do all the time, but I've learned to be smarter about that.
Yeah, no, I have to, you know, in talking about technology, and I think back, you know, it's hard for a lot of people, especially nowadays, to not think, you know, first of technology, but to give yourself some credit, you know, I think it was very difficult back then. You were going from an environment where things were sold and we weren't, as much as technology was emerging, I think, it wasn't like you look at today and it's AI and so you might not have spent as much time thinking about it because you were, I think you were caught in an age, and you can tell me, I'm making this up, that, you know, it was coming from this old school retail mentality, right? And although your concept was different, and into this new world where, you know, look, the iPhone was not even out, right? Or you know, so I think you do have to give yourself a little bit of, you know, even though that may have been the hardest lesson that you did learn then or look back on. Does that make sense?
You know, I think we all, you know, hindsight is, you know, it's all easy to look back and think about the things we could have done better. I do think it was an interesting moment in time where we were watching department store distribution of products waning. We were seeing the rise of e-commerce, but e-commerce wasn't yet, again, this is 2010, as sophisticated as it is today. So when you're talking about matching, you know, a tinted moisturizer to your face or a scent profile on your skin, people were having a hard time doing initial purchasing online. They were absolutely capable of replenishing supplies. And so I could have made better decisions, but there was a lot changing as it is the same today, right? There's a lot changing and you're trying to stay ahead of it. But anyway, I could have done that a little bit better, but hopefully I'll do it better this time around.
I am sure you will. But, you know, it is funny because when I think back to those days and, you know, we have listeners, a lot of young entrepreneurs, older entrepreneurs, but, you know, there was a time you were scared to give your credit card to buy something on the internet. There was a time, you know, Zappos, you know, everyone was like, how are you going to sell shoes? I can't put. And of course, he was super successful in doing that. But it is, so much has changed. But, you know, I do want to ask you, this is really interesting because you sell Beauty Counter, right? And to a private equity firm for $1 billion, which is, you know, a complete milestone. But it also meant stepping away from the company you created. I want to ask you why that was. And then what was the transition like for you after building this, you know, personally and then, of course, professionally, of what am I going to do?
When I decided to sell the business, you know, and I think one of the things, there's been a lot of stories and about what went down and why what I did, and, you know, just setting the record straight. And you know this because you're a business person, but sometimes people don't realize the complexity of business situations, financial sponsorship. So, you know, for those that are listening that are less, you know, less knowledgeable about this, when you take in institutional capital, there is typically a time limit on that capital because they have investors and LPs that are looking for a return on their investment. And so when I brought in institutional money earlier on in TPG Growth and other companies, there was sort of a 7-year window. And I knew that that window existed. Prior to selling the company, we've been approached by a strategic conglomerate who wanted to buy Beauty Counter. And I made the decision alongside my board to turn them down because I didn't really want to sell to a strategic and I wasn't really ready. But that sort of got that time that the clock started really ticking at that point, which I completely understand. So fast forward to late 2020, the board made the decision we needed to go out and sell the company. We made the decision to pursue financial sponsorship with the intention of taking the company public in success and for me to stay on as CEO. So it was never part of the conversation that I would step out. What transpired subsequent to the sale was that I closed my deal on May 20th of 2021. And the world opened up for the first time since we've been locked up in our homes for the past, I don't know, 18 or so months. And what happened and what I didn't do well was anticipate how to navigate the consumer marketplace, the women that were representing our brand, and the fact that people were moving away from spending on personal care and beauty to travel and clothing and things like that that they've been holding back on for the last 18 months. And it's not so much that we had a COVID bump, because we did, but I think we really flawlessly executed during COVID, but didn't anticipate when the world was going to open up and what that would look like. And that led to the private equity firm making the decision after about 4 months that they thought I could no longer run the company, and they decided to remove me as CEO. And to answer your second question, how was that? It was incredibly, incredibly difficult because, first of all, I was madly in love with what I was doing. I felt like I had a lot more work to do. I felt like I had a community of women to serve, and my identity was wrapped up in it, not to mention my financial wherewithal. So it was a really humbling, hard, frustrating, saddening experience. But the CEO that they brought in after a month or two just felt like there wasn't room for both of us in the brand and asked me to be removed so that he could do what he wanted to do to build the business the way he wanted to. And that's what happened.
It always bugs me just because as an entrepreneur, like someone like yourself, and whether it's you or other, building this entire business. And then, you know, I had sold my first business to a private equity firm too. And then they just bring in someone to run it. And most times they just run it into the ground. But it was frustrating because you knew everything, probably every little detail, insight, and could have been incredibly helpful, as I'm sure so many other people who have been in this position, you know, could have as well. So I'm sure, I could only imagine, you know, how difficult a time period that was for you. But it does sound like you learned a lot from maybe those couple years. And then I want to ask you if you did, and then how you got the courage to jump back in.
First of all, I learned so much during that period of time, not just about business, but about myself, my own strengths and weaknesses. You know, we all go through all those stages of anger and grief and all of that. I was very angry and emotional in the beginning, not particularly proud of the way that I handled myself because, you know, like, we can always make the private equity firm out to be the bad guys. And look, they made some really poor choices for sure, but so did I. I mean, we all made some mistakes. the CEO, that's a whole other story. If I learned one thing, it's arrogance has no place in the business world. And certainly he came in and tried to apply an old school beauty playbook and thought he knew. I remember him complimenting me publicly for being a smart founder that knew when to bring their, you know, sort of the real CEO in. That was really patronizing. And I think at the end of the day, I can't remember his exact words, but, you know, something to that effect. And I think that, but, you know, interestingly enough, I did that. When I went to Best in Company, I was watching everything that was going wrong. And I was also cocky and I thought I knew better. And the reality of the situation is you can come in as a consultant. I always say this to like the big consulting firms, you know, you guys come in, you think you have all the answers. There's a lot of context behind like the decisions that have been made. Like, why did I make that decision that seems stupid today? But maybe there was a reason why, or maybe this is why that didn't go very well. So I think that respecting the institutional knowledge, not just of the founder, but the team that built the business is wise. Going in with a level of humility and seeking to learn and understand is something that I now really more than ever will apply to anything and everything I do. Because I realize, and I always say this to my children, never assume you know more about any subject matter than the person with whom you're speaking. It just makes you look stupid. I've watched countless people go on and on about something, and then they turn, then the person goes, you know, I remember someone was talking to my stepfather at the time, he's no longer alive, but talking to someone about the armed forces, and he was blah, blah, blah. And he finally, the guy turned to him, he's like, yeah, I was a top gun fighter pilot. And I thought I was just going to die laughing because I'd gone on and on and on. It was so verbose. And literally this, you know, kid was so nice to sitting there listening to him. So I've said to my children, just, you know, be careful. And I think that applies to business too. That was a great learning for me is high confidence, low ego, seek to learn, listen, respect the institutional knowledge. And then yes, of course, bring your own experiences and brain power to a new business, but don't assume you know everything because you just don't.
Yeah, no, that's such a great point. And, you know, let's talk about, I guess, now you're launching Counter. And how is this new venture, I guess, different from Beauty Counter? And how does it build on what you started originally with Beauty Counter?
And it's so funny that you asked that because we had an offsite yesterday and I was saying, you know, and someone said to me in the office, we were talking, well, what really does Counter stand for today? And how are we different from the business, you know, that was? And where, what are the core tenets we're carrying over and the assets that we carried over? And what do we want to do differently? And, you know, it's something that I've been struggling with how to articulate, you know, why am I doing this? And I think at the end of the day, what I was able to sum up through hours of conversation yesterday is that I started Beauty Counter because I wanted to protect the health and safety of people I love and the people that they love. I felt and feel today that our health is our greatest asset. And Counter is about continuing the fight for clean, and clean is worth fighting for. And it's not so much about beauty products per se. It's about challenging industry to remove chemicals of concern from the products that we're putting in our bodies every single day, because our health matters. And it doesn't matter where you're from, whether you're older or younger, what your race is or your religion is, the thing that we care most about is those we love and protecting those we love. And so when I think about the audience we serve today, which is a more mature woman, 35 up, she's modern, she's knowledgeable, she's confident, and she's seeking longevity now, right? She wants to be there, as do I. I had children later. I want to be there at their weddings. I want to know my grandchildren when my kids decide to have children, should they so desire. And so for me, it is about fighting for clean. It's about helping the industry know what the standard of clean should be so that consumers are no longer challenged by it. And also powering up women to use their time, their energy towards issues that matter, and hopefully earning some money while doing so. I think all of those reasons still, to me, are incredibly important. With that said, the products needed to come into the market in a more refined way. The branding needed to feel new, modern, and fresh. And we named the company Counter because it is a new company, but I wanted a nod to the past. And I also wanted to look at the ways in which we distributed product and served our customers, and knowing that things have changed a lot since 2013 when I first launched Beauty Counter. And so, you know, we're no longer building teams within our seller environment, but we're really seeking to personalize their experience. There's a lot that has changed and much that is the same. But at the end of the day, I really do want to protect the health and safety of people. And I want to use business commerce is an engine for change and positive change in the world.
It's amazing. You know, to me, just it sounds like you still have that passion and energy, even after going through all of this, building this $1 billion business, back at it. But you're coming across, it's sounding like, I imagine you're just as passionate as when you were starting Beauty Counter.
Yes, I am. But interestingly enough, and you know this, having started multiple businesses and grown them successfully, just like in any relationship, your passion changes. And I think right now, I am steadfast in my commitment to the mission of getting safer products into people's hands, of comprehensive and health protective legislation. I think the thing that I fell most in love with during my Beauty Counter journey, though, was the economic and emotional empowerment of women. And I hate the word empowerment because it's so overused, but I do think that there is an opportunity side by side with men to bring more women into the workforce at different stages of life, to have more women help women have the confidence to vote with their wallets, to participate in their democracy, to feel that find common ground and causes that matter. And so I think that while the health and safety side of it is always at the forefront of my mind, I'll never change my position on that, I do want to really focus on how do I create incredible opportunities for women, and not to the detriment of men, but just really helping power them up.
Yeah, you know, I love that because I always find that, you know, creating businesses, especially one, if you're doing the world good, like you are with, you know, the products that you're creating, and you know, as I said, you were way ahead of the game back when you started this. Now more and more people are understanding, still not to the degree, but understanding, which is amazing. Secondly, all these women, and you can explain, and you know, I know I did in my intro kind of how it works, but you know, explain the feeling of just having all of these women who are working for you and seeing them generate money to raise their families. Is there any kind of psychological thinking back to your mom too, who kind of had to do the same thing?
You know, it's such an interesting question. So when people talk about Beauty Counter, the old company, they always refer to, you know, they always keep saying, oh, well, you were an MLM. And I said, no, we weren't an MLM. We were a direct-to-consumer brand powered by people. We had our own e-commerce platform from which you could purchase. We had a community of women, the OG creators that were building businesses, sometimes in their homes, but more times than not through their social channels. We had a partnership with Ulta. We had our own stores. Like, we met our consumer where he or she wanted to shop with us, and we provided them with an exceptional experience. What I think is disappointing to me sometimes when people look at the older school direct selling companies and businesses is that they look at them because of a few bad eggs as not being a positive thing. What I found to be true is that given opportunity, women thrive. And given an opportunity to say, hey, let me buy dinner tonight, or we can't afford private school this year, or I did buy that dress. You know, I do think that there is a lot that comes with, there's a lot of power that comes with money, and it happens in our day-to-day lives in ways that we don't even realize it. And so when you are doing something, when you're able to take action, be part of a community that changed an industry, when you're sitting there and your efforts led to the first time since 1938, the modernization of the cosmetics regulation, meaning all of our personal care products, that's something to be proud of. And I loved creating a platform upon which people were able to do that. And I wish more women had access to opportunities, because we are also trying to oftentimes raise children and balancing career, marriage, demanding husbands, demanding children, demanding jobs. It's hard to do. And so, you know, affording people flexibility and leveraging the power of technology, social channels, and human relationships, I think is a really compelling way to think about business. And I think today, brands and communities are one and the same. I don't think you can dictate to your customer anymore. You're working collaboratively with them.
Yeah. And you certainly have set it up like that, which really intertwine, not just saying it like I'm a fan of the brand. You know, these people are part of your brand. And just question before we go, you know, what advice, I guess, would you give to other founders, especially women kind of about owning their vision, protecting their equity, and kind of understanding when to pivot, what to go for, what to do it right now at this time. Is there anything or any piece of advice that you can share that might help someone listening who is thinking about starting their own business?
Absolutely. I mean, a couple of things. First and foremost, if you're thinking about starting your own business, overnight success in general is 24/7. So just know what you're signing up for. It's not as glamorous as it looks on Instagram. I can promise you that. Second of all, I think that in speaking specifically to women, get the mindset of the fact that being a woman can be an asset, not necessarily a liability. I think oftentimes women go into meetings, especially when they're raising capital, they'll walk into a room full of men, they start feeling insecure and doubting themselves, and they don't need to. They can actually surprise people and use that as something that is really accretive to their negotiating or whatever it is. I just think it's an asset, not necessarily a liability in any way. And then I think lastly, I do believe this to be true in most people. I think depending on what you're trying to achieve, you have what it takes to be successful. You just need to dig deep and be willing to walk through your fear, to know that you're scared and stay the course. And I think that so often we doubt ourselves. And I think if I look back at so many of the mistakes that were made along my journey, it was because I let others change my way of thinking. I'm sure you did the same, but women do it more than men, where you have a very clear vision. You know exactly what you want to do. That's why you're starting this company. But other people want to project their ideas or I did it this at that company and this didn't work, so you can't do this. And I was saying this yesterday, one of my first chief operating officer at Beauty Counter, who's a terrific person, but I remember saying to him back in 2012, I want to sell makeup in a kit because women have so little time. Let's just pull a few products together and sell it like that. And he's like, no one will ever buy makeup and kits. And now I see it everywhere and I think I should have done that, but I should have trusted my own gut instinct and rather than letting someone else tell me I was wrong. So those are a number of pieces of advice, but those are things I hope.
Was it a guy?
Of course he was a guy. And he's a great guy. But
why are you listening to him?
No. He is a good guy. And he was wrong. We could have sold makeup and kits properly packaged, and you see them happening all the time. My friend Bobbi Brown's doing it with her business right now. She'll bundle them all up and push them out through Jones Road. I mean, like, that's happening. And we're going to do that with Counter, but I just think trust your gut. It typically doesn't fail you.
Yeah. Well, that's great advice. And Greg, it's been a pleasure and great having you on and hearing your story. I have no doubt from what you've done already, created, been successful, and now in this stage where you are, will be extremely successful again. So thank you for joining us and thanks for all your insight. And it's been a pleasure getting to speak with you.
You as well. And thank you so much. I hope that we will do it really, really well. And I appreciate all the support.